Well, to federal politics now, from a new shadow ministry to debate about what to do with Australians with alleged links to Islamic State in Syria. It's been another eventful week in federal politics. Joining me to unpack it all is Shane Wright, Senior Economics Correspondent with The Age and Sydney Morning Herald. Shane, good morning to you.
Always a pleasure to see you, Sally.
Michelle Grattan is a Professorial Fellow at the University of Canberra and Chief Political Correspondent at The Conversation. Michelle, welcome back.
Hi, Sally.
And Evelyn Manfield is having a home game for the ABC, political correspondent today. Evelyn, welcome.
Hey, Sally.
To begin with, Michelle, what are your impressions of the new shadow ministry that's been announced, rewarding supporters and also keeping some others close?
Well, that's right. And, of course, the Lee camp found itself off the front bench or demoted. But I think also Angus Taylor has made some attempt to get a factional balance of sorts and also to promote unity and new faces, which is important. For example, it was interesting that Julian Lisa is in Indigenous Affairs, which shows that I think that the leader is looking for a broader policy than, for example, Jacinta Price would have given in that area. Just in terms quickly of a couple of other individuals, I think Tim Wilson will get under Jim Chalmers' skin, and that'll be a fascinating contest. I was surprised James Patterson is moving from finance to defence. Don't know whether he wanted this area, but I think he is one of their very effective performers, and finance gave him the scope to get across the whole area of government. It'll be a big job for Claire Chandler, obviously seen by the leader as an up-and-comer, but an enormous hill to climb there, I think. And the final point I make is that I think John O'Donoghue has an enormous task ahead of him in trying to craft an immigration policy which balances all the factors concerned. It's easy to say we need fewer migrants and we need migrants with the right values, but get to the details, and that is hard to achieve.
How do you do it? How do you see the economic matchup now, Shane? We've got Tim Wilson there facing off against Jim Chalmers. How do you see it?
Well, you would have seen the story that Paul Sakala and I had this week where Tim Wilson freelanced a little bit about the Reserve Bank and talking about its dual mandate, which has only been around since 1945, and you can see Jim Chalmers latched onto it like a seagull on a hot chip. So you can see Wilson is very smart, and he is aggressive. He's not afraid to have a go, which high risk, high reward. You can see that, and you're absolutely right, Michelle, getting under Jim Chalmers. Right in his face. Of course, the Treasurer also has the advantage of having a budget, and that will, like, I actually think the next 2 or 3 months in how they craft that will be really interesting, both for Chalmers, because he has set some big parameters for that and there's a lot of pressure on him, but it also means there's a lot of pressure on Tim Wilson, given especially where the Liberal Party found itself with its economic policy at the last election, and turning that around will be very interesting to see.
And Evelyn, we've seen in the past week the new leadership team of Angus Taylor and Jane Hume out and about right from the get-go last weekend as well, looking to have a political reset.
Yeah, they really hit the road, didn't they? You could see all those pictures sort of plastered along the TV channels with both of them sort of playing with a fake supermarket and kids sort of stuff. So they were really keen to get out there. The question, as you guys have been pointing to now as well, is when are we going to start to see some of that policy detail? There are obviously people within the opposition who have even been critical of themselves, saying we need to get something so we can go out there and have something to show the Australian people and really sell them. So getting to that detail now is going to be really critical. I think something really interesting that Claire Chandler actually said was about it's not it's not going to be sort of other people within the party, but it's going to be people like her and Tim Wilson and people younger than them that are really going to have to bear the cost of government policies and stuff. So that seems to be sort of where she's kind of headed, but we're going to need more detail.
Michelle, a big issue this week has been the government's stance on the cohort of Australian women and children who've been in a camp in northeast Syria. What have you made of the Prime Minister's comments on this? And of course, the soundbite of Scott Morrison from several years back has also been replayed. How have you seen all of that?
I think the Prime Minister has obviously toughened his stand in recent days. Partly this is probably because the opposition is really ramping up this issue. It's a bit unclear in various ways how the government was playing this earlier on. Of course, we did see some people come back, not only those children under Scott Morrison, but also some people under the Albanese government. But Bondi and the general climate has changed things, and this has become, I think, a very difficult issue for the government to handle, one that the opposition is very much politicising. I do think there's a counter case to the one that both sides are making, and that is when we deport people, we expect countries to take them back. In this case, I think that there is a moral issue about whether we should accept these people back, much as we might not want to, even though the argument's being run that they pose a security risk. I think that risk, the country should be up to managing that risk.
I think more than the moral case, just down the road at the High Court, they'd be going, oh, hold on. If, like, some of the commentary, particularly on the right, is getting very Trumpian, as in, right, let's ignore what the High Court has been finding in terms of we have to, if it's an Australian citizen, sorry, it's our responsibility. They come back. You cannot stop them coming in. Like that aspect, you could see that this will end up somewhere in the legal challenge. And the High Court's been pretty clear in terms of Australian citizens and, yep, you have to take them back, as Michelle has just pointed out.
And we've seen, Evelyn, throughout the week, and people would have seen outside of this place as well, a lot of Australians are talking about this issue this week.
Yeah, it really has been a big issue, I think, because, you know, of the pictures that we've seen of those women and children on the news, and because it is an issue that, I guess people feel emotion about, because what can sometimes get lost in these stories is we're talking about real people, you know, their backgrounds or whatnot aside. You know, we're talking about children here, and as a number of hosts have put to people like the Prime Minister this week, you know, they are children. Does that change things for you? And there's still being this really hardline stance.
You're listening to Radio National Breakfast, our Friday political panel, Shane Wright, Michelle Grattan and Evelyn Manfield. Michelle, earlier this morning I was speaking with David Gazzard, who's a former senior advisor to John Howard. The other thing that's going on in the background at the moment is the coalition trying to figure out how to deal with One Nation right now. We were talking about the 1998 election and after Port Arthur and so on. Why do you think One Nation is rising now? What's happening?
Probably a couple of factors. One is that I think that there is so much sort of discontent and grievance in the community, and people are, in a way, lashing out. Also, we've seen, and in conjunction with this, the decline of both major sides of politics, and so people are looking to sort of register a protest vote. Beyond that, we've obviously seen a massive collapse on the conservative side of politics, the Liberal Party imploding, arguing, falling apart really at state and federal level with leadership changes all around the place. And people who normally would have supported the Liberals, I think, have just deserted them and parked their vote elsewhere. Whether that's a permanent parking is another matter. And of course, the Nationals also have been kicking up, and some of their supporters would be pretty disillusioned by their behaviour too.
I was going to say, I think we'll see how much of a permanent parking, or they're just standing waiting for a new place to come up with the South Australian election. The news poll in The Australian today showing an absolute disaster there for the Liberal Party would be, that would be keeping Angus Taylor awake. And then, of course, there's the Farah by-election, whenever that came in. As someone who's lived down in that neck of the woods when Tim Fischer was the local member, and I clearly remember the 1998, that period, and how worried Tim Fischer was about the rise of One Nation. Whether we, I think that this will be the real test to see how much of the grievance holds through to someone having to go, right, I'm going to put a ballot into a box.
David Gazzard was talking this morning about that next stage in 1998 of having that initial sense of grievance, but then when One Nation needs to produce its tax and explain its tax policies and so on, when economics and other policy detail come into play, does that change things?
20 years ago, 30 years ago, maybe. I don't know if it's now. I think we're more in the vibe, the grievance. So I don't, I'm not convinced that if you could hammer One Nation on a tax policy, because that's not what voters are looking for One Nation.
Mm.
And it also comes down to whether One Nation, they're very different, they're much more professional operation than they were 30 years ago, even 10, 15 years ago. So whether they can hold that together as opposed to what happened previously.
I also think Farah will be an interesting test of the community candidate movement, because there's a strong community candidate there who got 20% of the vote, the primary vote at the last election. She's been campaigning ever since, running again. She's the only candidate in the field at the moment until the main players choose their people. So that'll also be, I think, quite fascinating to watch.
And things are not as simple as they may seem, in that some industries in that electorate and other parts of regional Australia, migrant labour is vital, whether it's working in agriculture or providing doctors, nurses and others. So there can be a sentiment one way, and in other ways communities are desperately trying to attract people from overseas to fill some roles as well. One other issue we need to talk about is when it comes to the Treasurer making comments about the Reserve, former Reserve Bank Governor Philip Lowe. What did you make of that, Michelle?
Well, look, I think this is a bad tactic on the government's part. I think the Prime Minister also made some remarks. I think that to suggest Philip Lowe, who is respected, is just saying this because he wasn't reappointed, looks like the glass jaw. And also the points he's making, the whole spending argument and so on, are points being made by a lot of observers and go to problems the government has. So not a good thing to do.
And Evelyn, the cost of living context, the backdrop to politics at the moment, it's not waning. It's still very important story.
Oh, it's everything. The cost of living is, you know, is going to keep being this massive issue for the Australian public. You know, we still hear people talk about it all the time, and we're seeing that, of course, case playing out at the moment with Coles and their specials, and you know, whether things were in fact on special. That's something that's certainly resonating with the public, because people are facing these pressures day in, day out.
Shane, we were talking briefly earlier about Tim Wilson's free-ranging about the Reserve Bank's dual mandate. What did you make of that?
Well, there's a reason we got very excited, because one, it has been a core of monetary policy in this country since John Curtin and Ben Chifley, so a very long time, and it's been bipartisan. There can be a debate around whether the Reserve Bank should be focused solely on inflation, like the Bank of New Zealand, or the dual mandate, which, like the United States, actually has a dual mandate, a bit like ours. I find that's why it's so interesting, because we've just had a review, the first review of the Reserve Bank, which said stick with the dual mandate, and you can argue the case. But you could see the way that Jim Chalmers jumped into it. Chalmers is not afraid, like the way he took on Phil Lowe. Like I was surprised he didn't mention that Phil Lowe as Treasurer, as Reserve Bank Governor, over the stimulus that was unleashed by the Reserve Bank dwarfs what the Federal Bank does, the Federal Government. It was about $500 billion. So, and there was an argument back in when Phil was in charge, you were too late to lift interest rates. So that, it's a free-for-all. I'm with Andrew Housen, the new deputy governor, who got asked about this the other day, and he said, look, if I'm not going to weigh into the federal government, because people could say to me and say, how about you get inflation into the band? You haven't been able to do that for 12 years, and they'd be pretty fair point to be making about the Reserve Bank.
Shane Wright, thank you very much for being part of the panel this morning.
Always a pleasure.
Michelle Grattan, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
And Evelyn Manfield.
Thank you.